This podcast is brought to you by WRFL, Radio Free Lexington. Find us online at WRFL.fm. Catch us on your FM radio while you're in Central Kentucky at 88.1 FM, all the way to the left. Thank you for listening, and please be sure to subscribe.
Welcome, everyone, to a special short edition of Philosophy Bakes Bread, which we call a breadcrumb.
Crumble, crumble.
Philosophy Bakes Bread is a production of the Society of Philosophers in America, also known as SOFIA. In our breadcrumb episodes, we're going to include either little snippets from past episodes that got cut off of our loaf, or, you know, we'll sometimes have phone calls of people who called in, like this episode.
We may, as Anthony was just saying, include responses to your feedback that we received either on Twitter at PhilosophyBB, on Facebook at PhilosophyBakesBread, or by email at PhilosophyBakesBread@gmail.com. Of course, another option is for people to give us a phone call and leave a voicemail and record that. And that's what we've got for today. That number to call, in case you all want to give us a call, is 859-257-1849. That number is 859-257-1849.
On this special breadcrumb, we are privileged to be welcoming Daniel Lake, Assistant Professor of Liberal Studies Department at Grand Valley State University, back on the show. Welcome back, Daniel. How are you doing
today?
Thank
you so much. I'm great. Glad to be here.
Awesome.
Regular listeners to the program will remember Daniel's awesome episode. I think it was episode 12. We called it, "That's a Wicked Problem You Got There." Let's say it with the right accent. We talked about wicked problems, and we had an awesome phone call. Someone called in, left a great message, and we thought we'd have Danielle back and give her a chance to respond and talk about the information in the phone call, the question in the phone call.
That's right.
Welcome back.
Yeah, thank you, and thanks for joining us, Danielle.
Love it.
What might make the most sense is to invite Danielle to talk about what her episode was about and to let the listeners know about that and remind people about what your episode was about in the big picture.
I think our episode was just about the kinds of challenges we're confronting today, that they're beyond complex and require more than technological innovation or expert intervention. Problems like global climate change, like the food system, like our healthcare problems, like poverty, terrorism, these kinds of issues are intractable, they're ongoing, they're interconnected, and instead of getting better, they tend to get worse. Right. So what could we do differently, and why have I decided to do more publicly engaged work? This was my research or my scholarship in my PhD program, and that led me to really want to commit to a philosophy that was engaged, that was on the ground, as a mechanism for helping us wrestle with these problems collectively across our differences. And then sort of my call to action at the end of that episode was, you know, what can we do in our own lives? How can we leverage anything over the past hour of this conversation into stepping into some of these issues? And what might that look like? And Phil gave us that great voicemail.
Perfect.
Yeah. Learning how to disagree well and listen to others. And then create these, I like how you said, create the physical spaces in which we can sit down with each other and not just disagree, but right, even with people we disrespect. And I think that's, to me, always the challenge, right? I don't just disagree with you. I think that what you say is morally abhorrent. And that's where it's really hard to have a conversation.
I absolutely agree. I was just in this workshop training on these issues. And one of the ground rules we wanted to lay was that we were going to respect anything anyone said. And I had to honestly say, I don't think I can consent to that. I cannot respect some ideas. That doesn't mean I can't respect the person or care for the person, but I'm not sure that I could genuinely consent to respecting some of the views that might come out over the next couple of days, or that we should have to. So that's the really rough challenge. And then to step into that vulnerable space and share in such a way. My other concern, though, or critique of dialogue, is that it doesn't, what's the next step? If all we do is endlessly talk in that space and walk away from one another, what's next? And so I've been looking at how others have imagined these spaces, have conducted these workshops to leverage the insights we're gaining into something that has a ripple effect. And it could be as simple as just asking us before we walk out of that space, how might you use any of this? What should you do next if you are going to advocate for change? Or how have you been touched and who might you share this idea with, right? But one of the processes recommended is called strategic doing. And it asks us to consider, to imagine what should be collectively. You know, what are our stories? What could be? The other problem is we often complain about the past and the present, but we never imagine a better future, right? Mm. It's easier to deconstruct than it is to build something better. So what could be? Let's imagine something else, right? What's the revolution here? And then what can be and what can we do as we walk out of this space to take one step towards that goal?
Awesome.
Right? That's leadership. So moving towards advocacy, but advocacy that's more empathetic, that's more connected, that recognizes that in advocating, we might be still partially wrong. We still need to listen deeply.
Well, so we got a phone call from Phil. Phil let me know that he drives a taxi in Lexington, Kentucky, and he was listening as the show aired. And he called and left us this message. He is a very philosophical guy. I'm going to play you his message. It's a little longer than the usual messages that we'll play on the show in general. But this is a special breadcrumb episode, and it was a particularly great message. So we're going to play you the whole thing. And then we'll invite Danielle to let us know what she thinks about Phil's message. So here we go.
Hello, this is Phil. And I just caught the episode of Philosophy Bakes Bread with Dr. Lake, and she raised a question at the end of what can we do to solve really sticky wicket problems. And I think one of the things that we can all do is encourage one another, even people that we disagree with, to encourage dialogue, to encourage thought, to encourage our best efforts. I think that is important in the world that we live in. And it makes a big difference to people to find that they are encouraged by someone else. Two other thoughts that I had. One was that in dealing with wicked problems, they often have long histories. And we, especially as Americans, have very short memories. We know dates, we know facts, perhaps, but a lived reality of history is not something that's part of our DNA, and we really have the attention span of a gnat. And sometimes with these big issues, we need to go back hundreds of years to find out what is it that led us to where we are today. And the last thought that I had on the show was the importance of being willing to listen to other people, especially people that we disagree with or that hold a different point of view than we have, and not only to ask people what they think or what they feel, but also to ask, why do you think that? Why do you feel that? If we can understand what motivates a person, what their logic was to reach certain conclusions, then we understand them better. And then we can really address issues that if we just take positions and defend them, regardless of what the other person thinks, we get nowhere. So those were the thoughts I had on the show, and I do appreciate it. And thank you very much. Bye.
And thank you, Phil. That was an awesome message. A lot to think about and some really good insights in there, I think. So what do you guys think?
Incredible. I was honored that he called in, and I completely agree with everything he said. And I can expand on that.
That's, yeah, please do, because it's like, yes, Phil, you
yes.
are right.
Phil, you are right. That's terrific. And for three philosophers to say that they agree with you just seems like, you know, it's impossible in the universe, but it seems to have happened. I think you had terrific points to raise, and I want to join everybody here saying thank you, because that was an awesome message and set of thoughts in response to Danielle's great question from her episode. So Danielle, tell us what is it you heard in this message, and what do you want to emphasize? What do you want to tell us?
Yeah, I want to run through his three points. He talked about the need to encourage others to dig into the history of these issues that we tend to have, he called it the attention span of a gnat. as I think he was talking about U.S. citizens, but in the world today, and that we need to listen more deeply and more consistently, and we need to dig in. So incredibly compelling insights across all three points he had to make. But just starting with this encourage piece, one of the things that struck me is that he's right, and that's one of the reasons I want to do publicly engaged teaching, that I really want to encourage students to see their capacity to step into these issues. But we also need to encourage ourselves. And then I started looking at the root of that, the need to have courage, right? That we have to find it within ourselves, but bring it out in others to dig into these messy problems instead of giving into the temptation to overly simplifying them and then demonizing those from which we disagree. So in addressing these problems, it's very convenient to focus on the need for individual change or even institutional change without focusing on what needs to happen inside of us in order to make that. So the idea, if we look at somebody like Grace Lee Boggs, that change must be two-sided. To change others, we must be willing to change ourselves. To push for institutional change as well, we have to expect that that's going to have an impact on who we are. And thus far, we're often focusing on that external piece and not enough on the internal, which again goes back to Phil's great recommendation that we need to listen. We need to listen to ourselves and others. So we need to value human relationships here. In fact, that's why they say one of the reasons these problems are wicked is because they're social problems. They're not just technological. They're not just scientific. They're social. They're ethical. So we need to dig into ourselves, really. And there's a resistance to doing that. And that's one of the reasons why they're so problematic. I really loved his point about history, and I'm actually still struggling with that. These problems have a long history, and they evolve over time. These are incredibly big issues. I'm challenged by that because we can never know enough. The kinds of uncertainties involved in these issues are almost endless, and acting and not acting on these problems carries a lot of consequences, right? Not acting, there's opportunity costs. And so if we want to wait until we know enough information, I think that's problematic. But I think that the methods we've designed to intervene in these problems are often very short-sighted. So he's got an incredibly powerful point about the need to dig into our histories. And if we link that point back to the need to encourage and to listen deeply, I'm wondering if oral histories might be a way of narrative and storytelling might be a way to help us uncover and empathize with those from which we disagree and then act from that. So going back to his point about listening then and listening more deeply, this brings me back to why I started to study democratic deliberation. I went through facilitation training, and I actually just went through intergroup dialogue training that University of Michigan is offering, designed to bring us together across our differences and dig into why we feel as we do and what the connections are across those differences and a need to move beyond disagreement, beyond debate, and beyond discussion to learning together. And I think that's incredibly important because the research on dialogue is often that we do use the power in the room to suppress differences. Very easily, these democratic deliberations that we have as a society, as a set of citizens, can lead to cascades where we ignore certain kinds of information. So we have to think carefully about how power plays in the room. We need to ensure that socially disadvantaged groups aren't silenced in those spaces and that these deliberations aren't used as a cover of legitimacy, or we forsake doing them, and then what are we left with? So if we're going to engage each other across our differences, and I think we need to if we're going to address these problems more justly, then we need to figure out how to do that better, and we need to figure out how to listen better and how to facilitate those conversations. And so that's definitely where my research has been going and my own practices.
I like how you pointed out something that I think a lot of people don't attend to enough, which is that the word encourage, people often sort of miss what's involved in that notion. And you kind of teased it out nicely, that to encourage is to help someone to be more courageous, right? And I always love what Plato had to say about courage, which is not the absence of fear, but fearing the right things and not the wrong things, you know? And so it's really a point about knowledge and having wisdom guide our emotions, especially fear, right? And so that's sort of a way of thinking about what you had to say about how opening our eyes to what other people say, let's say with oral histories and so forth, you know, we may gain the knowledge we need in order to fear the right things and not the wrong things, which then gives us courage. How do you see, what would be a group you could see needing encouragement, Danielle?
Yeah, so it looks like activism and engagement in the current student population across most universities is fairly low. It's low at our institution as well. But sometimes I see this in philosophers as well. It's just easier to opt out. So across our country, I would say, we keep isolating and fragmenting from one another. We keep surrounding ourselves with those we agree with, mm-hmm. and otherizing those we don't. So across the board, I see a need to come together, and we have to figure out what that looks like. How do I engage those who have views from which I don't just disagree, I completely disrespect? I think they're unethical, right? Mm. I think they lead to suffering. How do I sit in a room with others and engage in conversations across that kind of a difference?
That's a good question.
And why would I? You think the tension that's likely to arise, the conflict, how can I step into those spaces? How might we as instructors encourage students to find the courage, the bravery to take the risks of mutual vulnerability in sharing those stories? We all have to assume we have something to learn from one another. We also have to assume we have something to give, right? That I have something to offer others, that I have something to teach them, that my experiences matter, but that theirs do as well. And that within the exchange of that, there might be some shared insights and that we can be better from that experience. And I want to say as well that research has shown that when we do come together, we do learn from one another. It's not that we flip our positions, but there is some transformation in our thinking slightly on either ends of the spectrum when we do it well, right? So there's hope here. And again, we have to go back to digging into our own assumptions and not just others. So how do we create spaces to do this? That's physical spaces, virtual spaces, but also wherever we're at in our lives. How do we create these spaces with our family and our friends? How do we invite others into those spaces under the assumption that we have something to learn from them?
Some of you said, and this has always been a concern to me, you said something about using deliberation as a mm-hmm. cover to legitimacy. Mm-hmm. And you kind of said that very quickly, but this has always been a concern of mine, right? So you have these town halls that are going on right now. Politicians show up and we're having a town hall and the politicians say, look at me, I'm listening to my constituents, and then they go back to Washington and they haven't listened at all. Is that kind of what you're thinking about, right? So, yes, yeah. I'm being democratic, but not really.
Right, absolutely. Often the public conversation happens too far downstream. The decision's already kind of been made. There's no mechanism for ensuring that the recommendations will be enacted. There's no power given. So Sherry Arnstein, it's a really old article or from the 1960s on laddering citizen participation. And how do we move from placation and covers for legitimacy towards, you know, genuine citizen power? What does that look like? And what are the alternative mechanisms for ensuring that happens? So that is a concern. You know, how do we work with others we disagree with? How do we ensure that our voices are heard? That's definitely something I'm still trying to figure out. But I think the visual she creates in her article might be helpful to assessing when we think that these spaces are legitimate or not. Part of it's also about what happens in the room, whose voice dominates and whose doesn't. Who's summarizing the findings? Who's disseminating the findings and to who? Right. And so,
secretary.
Yeah.
It's the end of the semester here, UVA wise. And I usually end all my philosophy classes kind of by encouraging my students to when they think courageously and to think boldly and to go out there and act. You know, it, whether it's logic or philosophy or religion, I think anyone can do this. And so, yeah, that's a challenge for our listeners. Go out and be bold.
I think Absolutely. This is terrific. Thank you so much for joining us, Danielle.
Thank you. This is amazing, and it's such a joy. I really look forward to the next episode.
Awesome.
We're going to have you back again.
That's right.
Decided very soon, hopefully. All right. Well, I hope everyone has enjoyed our this little breadcrumb. I think it's been an extra special event for me.
Morsel.
Yeah, morsel. It's, you know, a nice surprise in my afternoon. It's really wonderful. So,
yeah, me too.
Thank you, Danielle, for joining us.
Thank you.
That's right. Remember, everyone, you can call us and leave a short recorded message with a question or a comment that we may be able to play on the show, just like Phil's, at 859-257-1849. That's 859-257-1849. You can also reach us on Twitter, Facebook, and email. For any of that info, again, visit philosophybakesbread.com.
This has been Dr. Anthony Cascio, Dr. Eric Weber, and Dr. Danielle Lake with Philosophy Bakes Bread, food for thought about life and leadership.
Hey there. If you're enjoying this podcast from WRFL Lexington, you may enjoy our live radio stream at WRFL.fm and, of course, via radio at 88.1 FM in the Central Kentucky area. We have a wide variety of programs you're sure to enjoy. Just go to WRFL.fm/schedule and see what programs appeal most to you. Thanks again for listening to this podcast from WRFL Lexington.